Well, thank you very much, Mr. Bohol. We'd like to call this meeting to order at 9:03. Would you like to do a review of the agenda and a roll call, Mr. Bohol?
Yes, I can do that. This is a meeting of the Arizona Osteopathic Board meeting virtually. Today is July 11th. It is 9:03 a.m. I will do a roll call of the agenda. Ms. Pichelle.
Here.
Mr. Goodman.
Here.
Dr. Walker.
Here.
Dr. Cunningham.
Here.
Dr. Shipbone. Dr. Matem.
Present. Thank you.
Perfect. You can...
Very much. Thank you very much. I'd like to welcome the medical students, Midwestern University, Arizona College of Osteopathic Medicine, and A.T. Still University School of Osteopathic Medicine in Arizona. Just as a reminder, the mission of the board is to protect the public by setting educational and training standards for licensure and by reviewing complaints made against osteopathic physicians, interns, and residents to ensure that their conduct meets the standards as of the profession as defined by law, ARS 32-1854. Can we move on to call to the public, Mr. Bohol?
Yes, and no one has signed in to speak.
Perfect. We can move on to item four then, review, consideration, and approval of the minutes. We have open session and executive session listed from June 19th, 2025. Do I have any discussion or a motion on either?
So moved. Doug Cunningham.
Motion to approve, I assume. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second.
And is this, Dr. Cunningham, for open session and executive session?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Does my second agree with that?
Yes.
Okay. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor of approving the minutes from June 19, 2025, open session and executive session, please indicate with an aye.
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 Any opposed?
Aye.
Okay. No. Sorry, any opposed? No. All right, motion passes. Sorry to be too fast for you there. Excellent. Would you like to move on to section five next, Mr. Bohol?
Yes, please.
Perfect. I believe that's A. Ann McComb.
That's correct.
Go ahead, please.
Pulling up my agenda. Okay, this is case number DO220066A, Ann McCombs. I believe Dr. McCombs has signed in to speak. Dr. McCombs, do you have an attorney present today?
Justin, yes, she does. We're having some technical difficulties right now, but this is Claudia Stedman. I'm counsel for Dr. McCombs.
Perfect. Thank you, Ms. Stedman.
Ms. Stedman, do you need a minute to straighten that out? We can move on to the next and come back to you, or whatever works best for you.
That would be great, if possible.
Oh, of course. Yes, of course. We want you to be able to get this together correctly. It's not a problem at all.
Thank you very much.
Oh, that's okay. We all love online meetings. Don't worry about it at all. Would you like to move on to item B, and then we can come back to A after that, if Dr. McComb and counsel are ready at that point?
Yes. This is case DO250013, Brett Blazer, DO. I believe the doctor has signed in to speak. Dr. Blazer, do you have legal counsel present today?
Do not.
Okay. Thank you very much. You can proceed. This case summary will be provided by Dr. Prom.
And Mr. Bohol, do we need to swear in Dr. Blazer before I forget?
Thank you for your recollection. Yes, please.
Please go ahead.
Dr. Blazer, will you please raise your right hand? Do you swear under penalty of perjury to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? I'm sorry, we're unable to hear you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Please proceed, Mr. Bohol. I believe this is Dr. Prom's case.
That's correct.
Go ahead, Dr. Prom. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Madam. Good morning, Dr. Blazer. This complaint is anonymous. The complainant alleges that Dr. Brett Blazer has committed unprofessional conduct by falsely advertising that he is a specialist. They note Vasectomy Pro advertises no needle, no scalpel vasectomies, and state that Dr. Blazer is Arizona's only full-time vasectomy doctor specialist. We reviewed the website for Vasectomy Pro, and when you search under Brett Blazer, it states Dr. Blazer is a board-certified physician who received additional expert training from one of the world's leading vasectomists. He specializes exclusively in the vasectomy procedure, performing over 50 vasectomies a week. If you look, however, under our team, Dr. Blazer is noted to be board certified in family medicine. A Google review for Vasectomy Pro has a very similar advertisement. In Dr. Blazer's response, he stated that he is a board certified physician who has dedicated full-time practice to specialize exclusively in vasectomy procedures, that he completed an extensive 12-month training in 2023 under Dr. T.J. Morris, one of the world's leading vasectomy specialists. We were concerned that maybe Dr. Blazer advertising that he's board certified and specializes exclusively in vasectomy procedures may be misleading to the public, in that the public could assume that he is a board certified urologist. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Pra. And Dr. Blazer, would you like to comment?
I'm an employee of Vasectomy Pro. They're the ones who did the advertising. So when it was brought to my attention, they said, hey, someone complained and said, you know, you're not a specialist. You specialize in it, but you're not a specialist because there is no specialty in vasectomies for now. And so they told me, hey, we got this complaint. They said they're going to report you to the board if you don't change this. I'm like, well, I didn't write this in the first place. You guys wrote this. Will you please change it on my behalf? And they said, okay, you know, we can change this. It's not going to say you're a specialist. It's going to say you specialize in vasectomies because that's all we do is just vasectomies. I said, great. That was done. Apparently, the Google ads still had old information. So the website said specializes in vasectomies. That's all we do. But Google ads still said specialist. And so that's where the complaint came from. So we went told them, go into Google ads, change that too. Like, you can't say specialist of vasectomies anywhere. So they went and changed that. And that's where we stand.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And it sounds like your training was extensive, a year with a specialist, although the question still is if this is something where a lay person would have been confused and if that might have raised the level of a violation of statute. Do I have any questions from the board?
No, but I have a comment, if it's okay.
Please, yes, Mr. Goodman.
Yeah, as a layperson, I could see myself being confused by this as well. And I think the appropriate steps have been taken here. I'll just also add, though, that even though they're doing the marketing for you, Dr. Blazer, it's still your responsibility to know what your employer is saying about you to the best of your knowledge and, you know, to the extent you can. So, sounds like you took the appropriate steps here, but we'd like to see just, you know, across the board, doctors are responsible for at least knowing what their marketing says about them.
That was a perfect statement, Mr. Goodman. Thank you very much. Although a lot of us work for companies, we're still responsible for what is said about us as long as we maintain our job at that site. So there is a responsibility for that. Perfect. Thank you. Any other questions or comments from the board?
Go ahead. Doug Cunningham, I'm glad that Mark brought that up, and I agree with everything he said. The clarification also, I think, should be that in these advertisements, he's board certified in family practice. When you are saying just board certified physician, that doesn't tell us what you're board certified in. So, and I think the impression is that you're board certified in urology. And so that's where I think is the question. So I think you need to do a step further and change that to board certified in family practice that also does vasectomies. There's nothing wrong with the primary care doc doing that, but I think the clarification should be there so that there's no misunderstanding with the public.
That's perfect, Dr. Cunningham, and I agree with that. Any other questions or comments from the board?
No.
If not, I would like to make a motion for a letter of concern, although certainly if measures were not made to amend this, I would be more concerned. But there's still concern for advertising that may mislead somebody to believe they're a urologist. I personally wear on my scrubs, when I do wear scrubs, and in my lab jacket what my board is, that I'm in emergency medicine to help prevent people from thinking I'm a cardiologist or some other specialty. I think there is a good habit, although that's not a standard. I think it's a good habit of making sure you're clear in identifying who you are and what your credentials are before giving advice. Do I have a second on that motion?
A second.
Before we go for a second, could I just do one step further?
Please.
Dr. Maidham, if I may, could we have staff then, this is not disciplinary, of course, but staff then to go back and then and have the doctor send to us that he's made those changes of our recommendation, and if he doesn't do those, then we'll open another complaint against him. So that would be my recommendation, and then I'll second your letter of concern, but I would ask staff if they would do that if you're in agreement, Dr. Maidham.
I will take that as a friendly amendment, Dr. Cunningham, and take your second also. Is there any further discussion? Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Mr. Monaghan?
Yes, thank you, board members. Assistant Attorney General Seamus Monaghan. I would just make sure that however you word that, that you just request that board, that, you know, he send in something to the board verifying what he's already done. If staff wants to go look at that later, that's fine. I just don't want to put too many requirements on the letter of concern, being that it's a letter of concern.
I'm fine with that, Mr. Madigan. Thank you. Justin, is that clear enough for you?
Yes, I understand. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Frozen. You froze for a minute, Dr. Green.
All in favor, please give me an aye.
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 Thank you. Any opposed? Thank you. Hearing none opposed, motion passes. We do appreciate, Dr. Blazer, your actions to amend this. I understand there can be some confusion here, and I appreciate your attention to this. Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys. Okay.
Are we good to move back to Dr. McCombs, or how are they doing there?
I believe so. Ms. Stedman, are you guys prepared?
If not, we can continue to move forward.
Okay. And, happy
sorry,
to move on.
Sorry, Justin, we are ready.
Oh, you are ready. Okay, thank you.
Perfect, okay. So could we have the doctor sworn in then?
Dr. McCombs, will you please raise your right hand? Do you swear under penalty of perjury to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you. I think you have two audio devices on there for the echo.
Sorry. Let me fix that.
Oh, no. Go ahead. Thank you very much. In the meantime, Dr. Prah, I believe this is your case also.
Yes. Good morning, Ms. Stedman and Dr. McCombs. The complaint, this is a little bit confusing, so I will try to make it as clear as possible. Dr. McCombs was working as a locum tenens physician with Dr. Ascaria's office in February of 2022. The complainant is a pharmacist from Prescott who complained that they called Dr. Ascaria's office regarding a prescription for Xarelto that seemed inappropriate, and was informed that Dr. Ascaria was not in the clinic, but that patients were seen by Dr. Ann McCombs. She stated that the prescription had come electronically as if written by Dr. Ascaria, but had actually been written by Dr. McCombs. She states she spoke to Dr. McCombs the next day, who was very appreciative that she had caught the mistake. This was a 73-year-old male who was first seen by Dr. McCombs on February 1st, 2022, for preoperative clearance for surgery on his toe. The note was dictated as if the patient had been seen by Dr. Ascaria, but the very last line under plan noted he was seen by Dr. McCombs, a locum tenens physician. The patient had a significant medical history for AFib, diabetes, sleep apnea, hypertension, and hyperlipidemia, and he was on multiple medications, including Xarelto 20 milligrams. As their custom in the office, a PT, PTT, and INR had already been drawn as part of a pre-op lab in January. When Dr. McCombs saw that the PT, PTT, and INR were all elongated, she decreased the patient's Xarelto to 10 milligrams and advised he would not be cleared for surgery until his coagulation studies had stabilized. She advised the coagulation studies should be repeated in a week. She then again decreased them again, on February 8th, and then the pharmacist spoke to her on February 9th regarding the prescription for Xarelto. On February 9th, it's noted in the record that Dr. McCombs had spoken to the pharmacist and had, in quotes, had been educated, and that Xarelto is not managed with PT, PTT, or INR levels. And you'll find that on page 36 of the 126 pages of medical records. The note states, we should not have decreased. The patient would be started back on Xarelto 20 milligrams. In Dr. McCombs' board response, she states she began working in Dr. Ascari's office as a locum tenens in January of 2022. She states she followed the instructions of his scribe regarding prescriptions and billing, and she states that the PT, PTT, and INR were all done on all patients taking blood thinners, and medications were adjusted accordingly. And she states, fortunately, the pharmacist caught my error and the patient was instructed to start back on his normal dose of Xarelto. We were just really concerned about Dr. McCombs failed to properly manage the patient's Xarelto prior to his surgery, and that she dictated a note as if the patient was seen by a different physician. Thank you.
I think you described that very well, Dr. Pra. Thank you very much. Dr. McCombs, would you like to respond, or would Ms. Sabin like to respond first?
Dr. McCombs has a statement that she's prepared. If the board would be willing to let her give that statement, I'll reserve any comments for later in the meeting.
Yes, that would be fantastic. Thank you very much. Please, go ahead, Dr. McCombs.
Okay. First of all, I want to thank you for the opportunity to appear today to address the board. And I want you to know how seriously I take the issues that were raised in this complaint. And I take my role as a physician very seriously. I worked as a locum physician multiple times throughout my career. And I understand the importance of providing quality care, even though it's not a practice that belongs to me. I'm transitioning in for a short period of time. And when I began my assignment at Longview Medical Center, there was no transition period. I had met the physician one time, spoken to him on the phone one other time in the fall of 21, met him one time in the December of 21. I was hired. He left the country, and I had no backup support or anything, and it was really quite overwhelming for me at the lack of organization, lack of communication, and the lack of support when I got there, when I arrived on the scene. And in retrospect, I really should have asked more questions to ensure that I felt comfortable seeing patients there and also with the administration in his absence. I should have considered also requesting that another physician be available to me for consultation in his absence. And while I was relying, he instructed me to that my training would come from his scribe that he'd had for 8 years, and that there was no other instructions given to me. That's what I did. I see now was something I should have paid a lot more attention to. And I certainly acknowledge that I didn't know about that phrase. It's my understanding that the billing department is the one who recommended that to the scribe, and I found out about it quite inadvertently several months later. And she indicated to me that because of the billing procedure, that she would go back and enter the phrase that she was told to enter by the billing department. I really didn't know much more than that about that phrase. I was just following the guidelines that I was given when I arrived. So, I understand that as the physician on site, I should have gone back to check to be sure that she had done that. And from every chart that I had seen from day one on January 3rd when I started. I also recognize that adjusting that dose incorrectly was my error. And I stated that in my narrative response and my supplemental response, and I sincerely appreciated that call from that pharmacist. I thought I had reviewed the note prior to when I saw the patient. The patient was seen by his regular physician, Dr. Golparian, and you'll see that in the medical records on 124, which was a week before I'd seen him. The patient was cleared for surgery. He was referred to his cardiologist for cardiac clearance. The labs were reviewed. And these are not my medical records. These are obviously belong to Thumbview Medical Center, so I had no access to them until this came up. But I remember questioning at the time, why was I seeing him? Because he'd already been cleared for surgery by Dr. Golparian. So it was just really unclear to me. And yet, right in Dr. Golparian's note was the INR and all of that. So when I asked the question, I was told to adjust that this is what was the policy in the office. I should have checked. This is all on me. I should have known to check, and I did not do it. But once the pharmacist brought this to my attention, I called the patient immediately, and thank God he had not changed his medicine. He was still taking the 20 milligrams that he had been prescribed because he hadn't run out of them yet. And there was only like a week or two, you know, where I had adjusted the dose. And so, you know, I questioned him thoroughly about symptoms, et cetera. He was having no symptoms. He was cleared for surgery. And I did exactly what Dr. Golparian did, which was refer him back to Dr. Tran for cardiac clearance and for the, you know, completion of that clearance. And I think you mentioned in there that the concern was a bit about suffering from a stroke. To my knowledge, there was no stroke in the history. There was no stroke after that. And no harm was done to the best of my understanding of this case. So while I've, and I remediated everything I could remediate in the clinic as a locums person, I only had so much I could do, but what I did is I remediated that policy immediately so that INRs and all of that was not done just routinely on anyone who was on this kind of a medication, a DOAC. So I was able to remediate that immediately, and it changed. The policy changed from that day on. And I got myself educated big time because my experience had been, you know, with heparin and other things that I had always adjusted with INR. And these were medications that I was unfamiliar with at the time because I wasn't using them. I was using warfarin, et cetera, in my own personal practice. So, and then I thought when I went back to look at Dr. Golparian's note and I saw that it was there, I thought, well, I'm not sure why I was even seeing the patient again when he'd already been cleared the week before by his own physician that he'd been seeing for many, many years, apparently, at that particular clinic. But nevertheless, I made this error, and I regret that very significantly, and I'm very happy that no harm happened to him and that he didn't change his dose, and we were able to rectify it right away and rectify the policy in the clinic going forward. So, and in terms of the documentation, again, I was unaware of it. When I became aware of it, I did everything I could to make sure that whatever the billing department said needed to be on the record was on the record. But I did not go back to check all the way to January 3rd when I started to make sure that those records were done. I noted in there, I saw where she had, the scribe had put in that I was the person seeing the doctor or seeing the patient. And she assured me that that was how it was to be done. So I took that at face value, but when the billing department asked, you know, that it be done on every record, she indicated she would do that, but I did not. I did not personally go back and look from January 3rd on for the entire time I was there that that phrase was at the bottom of each record. So that's on me. You know, those are the two things that I see that I should have done better, or should have been aware of and wasn't aware of and didn't know, you know, what to do beyond what I did was to mitigate what immediately my error and to do what I could to change the policy in the clinic, even though it wasn't my clinic. I felt it was important.
That's very well said, Dr. McCombs. I appreciate that. As Mr. Goodman mentioned in a recent case, we, as the physicians, are the captain of the ship, no matter what situation we're worked in. So there's still a certain amount of fault. From the points that I saw, there was a question about charting. If the charting was legitimate the way it looked like it was under Dr. Iscaria. I'm not convinced that's a problem, as your name was on the bottom of the chart. There was a question of prescribing under somebody else's name. I did see at least at one point Dr. Iscaria's name was listed as the supervisor of the prescription. I did not find all the scripts, and I'm not sure what it looked like on the other end, so I'm not 100% convinced that was a problem. And there's still a question of fund of knowledge, as of course PTINR is not a reliable measurement there, and you addressed all that. I appreciate that.
And not only did I educate myself at that time 3 years ago, but I just recently completed 10 hours of, you know, 10 or 11 hours of to just get even more up to date 3 years, you know, hence on DOACs and, you know, all the new medications that are out there. So I've done that part. And on the documentation part, I've completed the only course I could find that really addressed this particular issue in the charting part. And I've registered for another one that's, I think, upcoming in the fall, perhaps. It's not yet, but it's under risk management and that sort of thing. There's some other ones that might be coming up that are really dedicated toward nurses. And I didn't register for those because I didn't think as a physician I might even be given credit for those. So, you know, I'm here for your guidance. If there's more I need to do, please tell me what it is, and I'll be glad to do it.
Dr. Matem, I'll just add that we have submitted those certificates of completion to the investigator, Ryan Dominic, and he confirmed this morning that he had received those. Dr. McCombs will submit the subsequent certificate of completion for that upcoming documentation CME when it is completed.
I appreciate that. Mr. Bohol?
Ms. Stebbin took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to say that we had received those. I did review those, and she has completed that continuing education.
Perfect. Do I have any questions or comments from the board?
I do. If you can give me a little bit of time on this case. I'm very disturbed by this case. I'm going to just tell you that. First of all, let me just ask a question to the doctor. What are you doing now for practice? Are you practicing now, doctor? What are you doing now? Can you just give the board a flavor of what you're doing?
Yes, sir. I've been in private practice since 1989, and I still am. I'm practicing part-time now in Prescott, mostly telemed. I do some home visits with some of these patients because we're lacking in primary care in a major way in our area. And so I live in a 55 plus community, and there's a huge need. So I'm sort of, on call there, so I respond to that. But I'm mostly practicing part-time because I've been, doing other projects that were involved in starting, some projects for a mentor that of mine that I've had for 35 years who just died last September. And, those have come to a stop, a stopping point. They're still in progress, but that was why I went down to part-time. I recently signed a contract to work full-time, and while I was gone to Seattle, the doctor sold the four clinics in Arizona, and the person he sold them to would not honor the contract I had with the doctor. So I didn't go to work full-time in February as was planned. And so I'm still working part-time and,
I appreciate that.
I do.
All right, doctor. Thank you for updating us what you're doing. The second thing is, this case has been going on for 3 years. And Justin, if you can give us an update, what was the issue why this case hasn't come forward quicker?
So thank you so much for bringing that up, Dr. Cunningham. We did notify the licensee that we did have a complaint. Several times it appeared that we didn't have updated or current information. Then during the renewal season, the most recent renewal season, we did get updated contact information. So we were able to reach out to the doctor and get not only the records, but a response to the complaint, and so that we could be able to move this forward.
So, doctor, you do know it's your responsibility to notify the board with your current location, address, and how to get a hold of you. This has delayed this process now 3 years, which is very concerning to me as well. That's another thing that I'm concerned about. Moving to the next part, the medical part, I think Dr. Madem has addressed the issues with the charting and doing those things. My concern is your medical fund of knowledge. The basics of doing Xarelto are part of, I'm a primary care physician as well. I've been in practice for over 38 years, and these are the basics. Xarelto, and clearly not knowing about PTINRs, and then to then talk about the scribe then giving your information and so forth is very disturbing to me, that you're allowing those individuals to dictate what I, in my opinion, your medical care. So that being said, I'm not going to go into a whole bunch of things, but I am very concerned, and I would ask the board, if other board members would agree, I would like to have Dr. Makem, I appreciate she's done CME. I'm glad that she's done that. To me, that's not enough. For me, I think that we need to find what her fund of knowledge is, and I feel a PACE evaluation would be the most appropriate, especially if she's going back into full-time practice again. I'm going to tell you that is very disturbing to me. I don't know. I'm not saying we should limit her practice at this time, but I don't think the board has enough information to make a decision what really her medical knowledge is, her skills and those things, without having an evaluation by PACE. So I would make a motion if Dr. Madem agrees, Dr. Madem, if you want me to step back, I'm happy to do that. But I would make a motion that we have Dr. Makem be evaluated for a PACE evaluation, send her to PACE, and then we could reconvene on that after we have the PACE evaluation. If Dr. Madem, if you agree being the chair, doctor.
Dr. Cunningham, if you don't mind leaving your motion on the floor, leaving it open, okay. Just give a chance for further questions or comments from the board, and I'll give the opportunity for a second at that point. I think you hit the nail on the head, though. I appreciate that. Do we have any other questions from the board? Yes.
Dr. Madem.
Frozen.
Yes, Dr. There we go. Go first. I might have to move computers here, but go ahead.
Did Clay, did you have just a comment that you, a short comment that you wanted to add?
I did just want to clarify two pieces here. First, I think that it may have gotten confused the involvement of the scribe. So Dr. McCombs was not taking direction for the PT INR test from the scribe. The scribe issue came up with the notation in the medical record as to who saw the patient. We acknowledge, Dr. Cunningham, that there was a significant misstep here with running the PT INR test on a patient who is taking Xarelto, which is a direct oral anticoagulant. But I just wanted to clarify that she was not taking direction from the scribe with respect to running that test on that DOAC. And this may be premature since the motion is pending, but we would like to talk with the board about some financial hardship components to a PACE eval if that is ordered, and if the board does decide to go that route, if there are alternative competency assessments that the board would consider that are a less expensive option. So apologies for interrupting. I just wanted to clarify.
Thank you. Sorry.
Go ahead, Dr. Chabon.
I just want to let you say what you had to say. So, in response to that, and Dr. McComb, I was just trying to clarify a little bit more of what you're doing, and thank you so much for being here today, and thank you for doing locums. I think that's a necessary aspect of coverage in the medical field that's often overlooked, and it is difficult to go into a situation where other physicians are practicing in a certain way and you're coming in. You currently still have your own part-time practice, is that correct?
Oh yes. I haven't stopped practicing part-time at all. I'm right through everything. I've maintained my own practice, and I would like to make one other clarification. And the other locums positions that I was in, it was either through a recruiter. So there was a company, that hired me, not the physician that hired me. Or I worked a couple times in corrections. So that was a separate company that hired me. This was my first experience of being hired by a physician that I did not know and that I had no knowledge of. In the lessons learned part of me, I will never do that again. I would only work, with a reputable company, or if it was a colleague that I knew well and needed help, I would do that. But I will never repeat this situation where I work for someone that I do not know and that I do not vet in a way that the recruiting companies vet, that I don't have to do. And so that's a huge mistake on my part and a big lesson learned for me not to go ever do this again. I will never do it again because I didn't know, this is my first foray into this, and, COVID changed everything and all of our lives, with a lot of telemed going on. And, before that I was in Washington for 28 and a half years and had a very full-time private practice and came down here to take a year off to help my mentor write a book that turned into a 3.5-year project because of COVID. So I got sort of stuck in Arizona and, needed to do this, and so this is what happened, and that was my error not to vet this man.
And so when you went into the practice, I think we kind of clarified some of those, but just for just to kind of put it out on the table here, so to speak, to talk about it, when you were practicing under his at this office, did they give you a separate EHR login, or were you under his login?
No, I was under his login. I was okay. Told that for the first 60 days as a locums person, that's what I was supposed to do. And that beginning on day 61, they were credentialing me because he was going to be gone for 90 days, that then they had to do the credentialing part. And so, yes, I was told to log in under, those were the instructions I was given.
And Dr. Chiffon, just one additional clarifying piece on this. At the time, the EHR that the practice was using was eClinicalWorks, and they had an electronic fob for e-prescribing, and Dr. McCombs was instructed by the practice, I think because of the way the EHR technology was limited with the e-prescribing fob, to use Dr. Ascari's until that 60-day period ended and she was independently credentialed and could receive her own login information with the EHR, which would include her own secure electronic fob.
Which is what happened.
Okay. And as you know now, I mean, certainly having a your own access to HR and signing it with your own name, or at least making a acknowledgement of that, and certainly sending scripts if you're not able to send it through the EHR appropriate way would be essentially to, you know, especially non-controlled substances, to call and send it under your name, or have the, you know, not to have it under someone else's name.
Yes, ma'am. I know that now.
Okay. And then as far as, I guess, you know, certainly you're practicing and you're part-time, and you're covering an office. Sometimes there's going to be other issues or other medical conditions that come up that you're not familiar with. And, typically how do you handle those when you're doing the locums coverage? Such as like this, the Xarelto one is an example, but just in general, if there was a patient that came up that you weren't familiar with, or a subject that's out of your scope, so, you know, from what you're normally practicing, how would you typically handle that on a locums basis?
Well, I would certainly do my own research, and if it was out of my scope, I would refer. I would refer.
Okay. In this case, obviously, the Xarelto, I think it's been around for a while, but I certainly appreciate, you know, it is more expensive, and maybe the patients that you're seeing are not on that
my
medication.
I'm sorry. Excuse me.
No, you're fine. No worries. Go ahead.
Sorry. That's absolutely right. They are more indigent. They don't have a lot of funds for these kind of medications right now, and I recognize that. I believe this one has finally become generic, but certainly wasn't back then, and people couldn't afford it. So I tend not to prescribe what people can't afford. I tend to take their finances into consideration, especially because a lot of them are seniors and they're living on limited income. So that's a lot of it for me. I try very hard to make it affordable, care affordable for them.
Okay. And so when you did see this medication that you're not familiar with, which certainly can come up, I understand, you know, obviously the mistake was made, but do you typically, when you see things that you're not familiar with, is there a process? Do you have some online apps? Would you call the pharmacy? What would be your typical?
Yes, I do. I have online apps, and I do have a pharmacist, you know, that I trust that I can call for questions in my area. I always have. Relied on the pharmacists in my area. I was just new to the area in Prescott. I didn't know any of the pharmacists. I had only been there a month, but in Seattle, I certainly had pharmacists that I relied on, and I did my own research. Always have, always will. This was a clear mistake on my part in this particular practice, and I learned from it, and I've never done it again. I'll never do it again.
Gotcha. So it sounds like with this particular practice, you were a little bit overwhelmed with the situation and it kind of threw off your judgment on certain things. I certainly appreciate that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's not an excuse. I'm not offering it as an excuse, but it is what happened. I was overwhelmed.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much for answering my questions. And you are, it sounds like you are certainly doing some CME. You're currently doing part-time practice, but no locums at the moment. Correct?
No, I'm not. And I won't do it again. Like I said, unless I do it through a company that's reputable or a colleague that I trust and know. Okay. That's what I'm going to stick to for the future if I do any more locums again, ever. There's such a need in my area that I love doing what I'm doing, even if I'm just doing it part-time right now. There's just a huge need in my area.
And you are a family practice, and are you board certified in family practice, or?
I am not. I did in the DO program when I came through. The option was to do a 6-year. I was the last class that did the 6-year option. If any of you are old enough to remember the 6-year option, and I was then the last class who did that, and my practice was full within 3 months. So board certification wasn't even a thing that we did in the early 90s when I was practicing. And so when I went back, I think it was in the mid-2000s, I was told that I'd been practicing for 15 years and I'd have to close my practice, go back and do a 3-year residency. And the AOA, the person that I spoke with, just laughed and said, "We know you're not going to do that." So I never was able to take my exam, and because they merged with the AMA in 96, I believe it was, and the last date that it could be taken was 95, but we were not notified of that. They made a notation in the DO journal, but never sent us individual notifications that if we didn't take the exam by 1995, that we would never be able to take it again. I did not know that, and I found that out in 2008, I think it was, when I found that out. So I had no option to become board certified.
All right. And you're licensed in Arizona and Washington, is that correct? Or?
Yes, I am. I was licensed in Washington. I've maintained my license in Washington because I still do telemed with some of my patients there. So I have not given that. I won't give that license up. And then when I came to Arizona, as I said, I only intended to be here for a year. But when then everything got extended, I thought, well, I may have to do some locums here. So I got a license in Arizona.
Okay. Thank you very much. And I'll bring it back to you, Dr. Maynham, or any of the board members that have further questions.
Good questions. Thank you, Dr. Chapin. Any other questions or comments from the board?
Dr. Maynham, if there are no further comments from the board, I'd like to make a motion for executive session.
We have a motion for executive session. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
And Dr. Chapin. All in favor? Aye.
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 Let's move to executive session.
And just to clarify, that was purposes of receiving legal advice?
That is correct.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You should receive the link right now. believe. Yep, we have everybody. Here we go.
Sorry about that.
No problem. The open session is again in process. Do we have any further discussion or questions?
I'd be, if it's okay, Dr. Madam, I'll go first, if that's okay
yes.
with you.
Yes, please. Thank you.
I'm going to make a I'm going to withdraw my motion that I had for a PACE, and that I think that there would be much more. I didn't realize the cost of the PACE has gone up so high, but I don't want to put a stress on the doctor. I think that we could evaluate her quantum knowledge by doing. I don't. Do you want to make that as a motion, doctor? Made him for the specs exam, or is that what you call it, Justin?
The special purposes examination, either through Federation of State Medical Boards or...
So just exactly what Justin said, make that motion, and that is a much more cost-effective way for the doctor, and I think that Justin can then work with the attorney and the doctor with an agreement, and then have that, and then that can be brought back to us by Justin. And then we could just, if that's the motion I want to make.
So to be clear, a examination to evaluate for fund of knowledge specifically, with that to be coordinated with our executive director, Mr. Bohal. Would that be fair,
correct.
Dr. Cunningham?
That is correct.
Okay, thank you. Do I have a second?
Second.
I'll second. Dr. Walker.
Second from Dr. Walker. Thank you very much. Any further discussion?
Just to be clear for the record, that's an interim order that you're issuing?
That is correct.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussion? All in favor, indicate with an aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Any opposed? And if I remember correctly, that is not punitive, so I do not need a roll call. Is that correct, Mr. Bohal?
That's correct.
Okay, I like to make sure I'm doing things correctly. Okay, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. So Dr. McCombs and Ms. Deadman, please contact Dr. Or Mr. Bohal. I apologize. Seeing none opposed, motion passes. Please contact Mr. Bohal. I got this. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Would you like to move ahead to item C, Mr. Bohal?
Yes, and actually I do have an update for the board. We did not receive the case receipt back from the doctor that she would be attending today. I do not believe that she is in attendance. We have been attempting to confirm if the attorney is still representing her. We were unable to do so. So at this time, staff is requesting that a continuance be granted and that this case would be brought back before you at the next meeting. In addition to that, if the board, since they've reviewed the materials, if they had any additional direction for staff, if there's any documentation or other items that you require, you can direct staff to issue an interim order to obtain those.
And just to be clear, we're speaking of DO 230177B, Dr. Suzanne Bentz?
That's correct.
And I'm sorry, you were able to reach out to Dr. Bentz but did not get a response, or are you having trouble getting hold of Dr. Bentz?
We did send a notice of the case, but we were unable to confirm that she opened it, and she did not send in the case receipt back to us saying that she would be attending today.
And this case was originally opened in 2023, do I remember correctly?
That's correct.
And we're still not getting a response from the doctor?
We did get a response to the complaint, but we did not get a response that she would attend today's investigative hearing.
And how long ago was that notification?
We send notice 35 days before the meeting.
And the doctor is notified during the initial contact that they're going to be contacted with the board meeting scheduled, if I remember correctly?
That's correct.
Okay. And just for the record, I do believe, Justin, your notice for this investigative for these investigative interviews states, but if not received, then the board will either move forward, you know, towards a formal hearing or will continue the matter. I guess what I'm trying to say, Dr. Mike Tim, is that a no response is not necessarily a bad thing. It's just it may be them exercising their right not to attend.
I don't know. I understand. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Mr. Monaghan, is there any further information requested by the board on this case?
Just Doug Cunningham. I'm sorry. Ask a question. Can you, Doug Cunningham, we didn't hear anything from her attorney either, because I saw the letter from the attorney. So were they noticed as well, too?
That is my understanding, but we haven't received anything from them. But we were unable to confirm that they opened the email.
My only question was, is that can the I know that she has several clinics in different states. Is there a way to go and look and see if there's been similar complaints from the states that she is licensed in? I know Oklahoma's one. I think Texas is one. Arizona. I don't remember. I think that's just those three. I can't remember. But could I direct staff to see if there's been any other similar complaints along that line?
Yes, we can absolutely go in and obtain that before the next meeting.
That would be my only recommendation, if that's okay with you, Dr. Matum.
Yes, sir. I appreciate that.
And staff will get a hold of the doctor or their attorney and confirm that if they are exercising their right to move this case to formal hearing. And if that's the case, then staff will begin that process.
Any other requests or plan? Otherwise, I would like to table this until next meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. I appreciate it. Are we okay to move on to D? How is the board doing? I'm okay to move on.
Can I just take a biologic break for 2 minutes?
About 10 minutes.
I have TB, tiny bladder, okay?
10 minutes break. If we can reconvene here by 10:20.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. I appreciate it. Why don't we move on to item D? Is that the next case we have to look at today, Mr. Bohol?
Case number D is DO-240183A, David Foy. I believe the doctor is signed in. Dr. Foy, are you represented by legal counsel? And I'm sorry, you're on mute.
Justin, this is Cody Hall. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm counsel for Dr. Foy this morning. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you, Mr. Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Hall. I appreciate that. Could we swear Dr. Foy in?
Dr. Foy, will you please raise your right hand? Do you swear under penalty of perjury to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Thank you.
Perfect. And I believe Dr. Prah is presenting this case. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Dr. Prah. Thank you.
The complainant is patient LG. The complainant states she was seen by Dr. Foy in August of 2024 for a hard lump in her abdomen. She states Dr. Foy did not examine her at all. And when she asked about this, he stated he did not need to do an exam because she had already told him what she had. He states Dr. Foy asked her if she wanted to go to the same doctor her husband had been seeing for her hernia, and then he did refer her to Dr. Hanshaw. He saw Dr. Hanshaw on September 10, 2024, and Dr. Hanshaw noted that she had a palpable left lower quadrant, firm, and non-tender mass. He ordered a CT scan of the abdomen and pelvis, which was performed on September 23, 2024. And this demonstrated a fibroid mass that was 10 by 11 by 12 centimeters. And you'll find that medical record on page 1 to 3 of 6. He also noted in the medical record, it was also noted in the medical records from Southwest Imaging. The patient was then referred by Dr. Hanshaw to Dr. Bakura, and she was seen on September 23rd, 2024. She also complained of abdominal pain, anal bleeding, diarrhea, urinary insufficiency, urgency, and urinary incontinence. Dr. Bakura performed a da Vinci robotic hysterectomy, a bilateral salpingo oophorectomy, mini laparotomy, and umbilical hernia repair on November 20th, 2024. He noted that he had found an enormous uterus that was growing into the bladder and causing hydrourea bilaterally. And you'll see that operative report on page 7 of 264 pages. We did wonder about the creatinine, and we investigated that and found that the creatinine, even though she did have the hydrourea, her creatinine was not elevated.
Thank goodness.
In Dr. Foy's board response to his attorney, they state that LG had no pain at the time of the appointment. They state the patient mentioned it might be a hernia and expressed an interest in seeing the same surgeon her husband had seen in the past. They state, based on the fact that the patient felt she had a hernia, Dr. Foy provided education on hernias and showed the patient online images. They state Dr. Foy felt the patient's primary reason for the visit was to obtain a referral to her husband's surgeon instead of allowing Dr. Foy to conduct a medical exam. They state Dr. Foy decided to provide a referral rather than to an attempt, a, in quotes, what appeared to be unwanted physical exam in this case. And if you look at Dr. Foy's medical records on page 29 of 50, you'll see that when the patient was seen on August 28, 2024, complaining of a hard lump in her abdomen, she didn't obtain a history at all regarding the mass, how long it had been there, if she was having any pain, if it caused her any other symptoms, and he also did not perform a physical exam at all. This was my concern, was that there was no history of physical performed, and he also did not order any laboratory or any diagnostic studies. And if this would have been a malignancy, there was a definitely result, a slight result in delay of care, although the patient was seen rather soon because she was seen by Dr. Hanshaw. and he found the problem. But if it would have been a malignancy, that could have been a lot worse. Thank you.
Sorry about that. Do I have audio working again?
I believe you do, Dr. Maynham.
I apologize. My network just completely died, so I switched over to cell service here.
Thank you. Dr. Prad did complete her report. Do you need any refreshing on the case, or are you ready to hear from the attorney and the doctor?
Oh, actually, that was perfect. I dropped out just as Dr. Prav was considering her, completing her concerns. That worked out perfectly for that. So I apologize, Dr. Foy. Would you like to speak first, or your attorney?
Thank you, members of the board. This is Cody Hall. I'm going to speak first, and then the doctor will have his questions, okay? Thank you. Again, my name is Cody Hall. I am the attorney for Dr. Foy this morning. If you looked in your packet, probably the letter was written by another attorney at my firm who has since left. So that's why it's not the same person who wrote the letter. I just want to offer a few comments before the questioning starts, which is, you know, the complainant and Dr. Foy really have very different recollections of the August 28th, 2024 appointment. And the question really comes down to, did the claimant see Dr. Foy for a true diagnostic exam, or did she see him because she believed she had a hernia and she just wanted the referral to the same surgeon who had performed surgery on her husband? Some patients clearly go to a doctor just to get a referral. They think they know what they need. This would appear to be a classic she said, he said situation because we have two different versions of that appointment. But there is a little information that the board, I think, can look at to see that there is evidence that supports Dr. Foy's recollection and version of the events, which is that the patient was seeking a referral. If you look into the records, in particular, and again, I don't know the page numbers, but I believe Dr. Prav said it was page 29, which is the office note. There is some history that was taken in the office, and under the HPI, it says patient presents to the clinic with low suprapubic abdominal tenderness and mass for the last few months, possibly a hernia like her husband had, but not for sure. That is information that Dr. Foy had to have obtained from the patient in the exam room. In the appointment information, when she tried to, when she set up the appointment for the portal, the only history she provided was there's a weird lump or hard spot in my stomach gut area. She didn't provide information about the duration or whether it was tender or whether it was painful when she booked the appointment. So there was some history taken. And this is information that he must have learned from the patient. The information that you would record under the HPI is not your diagnosis or assessment. So it would be weird for him to be putting up in the HPI that she possibly has a hernia based on his belief, and then it was her husband, and the comments about her husband. So Dr. Foy did attempt to explain what the hernia was. I think both parties agree on that situation. But the patient, at least in Dr. Foy's recollection, she wasn't really there for an exam. She knew or she believed she had a hernia similar to what her husband had, and she wanted the referral to the same surgeon. This appears to be a situation where Dr. Foy did not accurately document the exam. He should have documented that she was there for a referral and that she refused a physical exam. He didn't do that. He has since taken a medical record keeping course in person, and we can provide the documentation to confirm he's taken that course. And I would also note that, I mean, Dr. Prad did note that there was a slight delay, but it was not a significant delay because the patient was seen very quickly. And the patient's symptoms that she reported to the subsequent providers were much more serious than what she presented and what she told Dr. Foy. The only thing she reported to Dr. Foy was abdominal tenders, no history of bleeding, abdominal pain, et cetera. So a doctor cannot force a patient to undergo a full exam if the patient doesn't want it, if the patient wants a referral and that's what she thinks she wants. So unfortunately, that is Dr. Foy's recollection of the events of that appointment that day. And I would renew the request that was in the letter from the counsel who represented it, which is either a dismissal or a letter of concern for documentation, I think is the appropriate outcome in this case. Thank you. Dr. Foy?
Thank you.
I'd like to provide a summary as well. If that's
Please, go right. ahead, Dr. Foy. Yeah.
So the patient came into the office, and the first thing I typed in was her first statement that said that she or her husband had a hernia, and it was actually incarcerated hernia, so she had it done at Thompson Peak over in Scottsdale. Then they saw a wonderful surgeon there, and she's there as well today. She has a 3 to 6 month lump that she noticed, and she's like, and I think I have a similar situation or a hernia. It's, you know, super pubic down below here, and I probably need a referral too to a surgeon. And she didn't at that point say which surgeon. She just said a surgeon. And I, you know, reacted a little bit and said, well, let's slow down a little bit and let's, you know, see exactly what hernias are. Let's, I mean, because it may be something else as well. So that's why she's, you know, thought it was strange that I was trying to show on the screen. You know, you may not have the same thing your husband had. If he had a incarcerated hernia, there's ventral hernias, there's inguinal hernias, there's all, you know, there's tumors, there's, I go, so I was just trying to slow her down a bit, and didn't succeed, because then she turned around and then just said, well, do we have to go through all this when I really just need the referral to the, so she was definitely a little bit frustrated, thought maybe I wasn't going to give her the referral. So at that point, yes, she just did. Her statement was, if we could just skip all this and I can get the referral, that would be, would that be fine? Because I'm ultimately going to, she said, I'm ultimately going to have to see the surgeon. You can't do much except diagnose, and I pretty much already know I have a lump here. So do you mind just giving me the referral? And I guess because it was 7 o'clock in the morning, she thought I'd just, you know, write the referral, which I was kind of at a crossroads at this point. Do I write her the referral and make sure she gets seen? Because if you wait 3 to 6 months and you have a big fibroid growing in there, my thought is, or not just a fibroid, but a tumor, she needs to get seen. In the interest of the patient, I'm probably going to have to give her this referral if she keeps on pushing, right? So that's, it was an interesting situation as far as I was, you know, trying to explain that, yeah, we, you know, I'd like to do the normal history, HPI, and get the full physical done. We never even got to the physical. I mean, just because she made the point, you know, as well, yeah, I'm going to, this is not going to be, I need to have someone that can treat this and finish it, you know, do the whole workup. And is it, you know, why can't I just go see the surgeon? That would be much easier. So I guess I didn't have much to say back, except that's also fine as long as you go and see him and we get the, get it set up quickly. Michael, I can go ahead and write the referral for you. And so I get on the computer. She was probably only in the, in our office of, you know, 5-6 minutes. I type up the referral, but before I did that, I should back up. She also, as soon as I said I can do the referral, she jumps on the phone and her cell phone in there and calls her husband and gets the name of the surgeon and the phone number. And then, of course, then I can look it up on our EMR, and he's in Scottsdale. He's not in her area over here. And so I write a referral there, not knowing, you know, if she's going to be covered, isn't going to be covered, because there is, the, you know, the whole share, kind of show, medical co-sharing plans, that if you go out of network, you get into big trouble as far as you're going to end up paying for things a lot more because you're not in network anymore. So I didn't consider all that, but I got her the referral. She walked out of the office, and I just said, if you have any trouble or you, you know, can't get into him quickly, let me know. Gave her the referral. She obviously got in, I think it was about 9 days later. So it would have been nice if she had gotten in even quicker, but I can also tell you that she wasn't in any acute pain. I did do 5 years of urgent care first. It was an urgent matter, but it wasn't a, like emergency matter. I'm going to send her, you know, to an emergency room. She wasn't in any acute problem or pain, so I figured let's get her quickly over there, make sure she has no trouble getting in to see him. I probably won't look good at the end of the day, but the patient gets taken care of. That's still the most important thing. So that's what, I mean, yeah, I'll take the hit. I mean, and I do apologize to the board for my note. Yeah, I figured once I had her with the referral, things were, you know, she's going to get seen. She's going to get taken care of. I was sloppy in doing all my detailing. Now that I'm telling you, I didn't put it into the note, right? You are correct. 100% on my, that's my biggest fault. I mean, trying to resolve the situation with her, kind of the back and forth, that didn't last that long because she needs to get, see someone and get this fixed. I don't think she's making up. You don't come in at 7 a.m. to try to just make up you have a tumor or a lump in your abdomen, but I don't think that lump grew there in one day. I think it had been there. At least, I mean, it all got taken care of, and I do agree, though, with the other doctor, too. That could have been a cancer of some type. There's a lot, we can go through the differentials. There's probably 20 things, but I think ultimately the patient needs to be, you can't deny them a referral. Even though we were kind of going back and forth a little bit, I think you work with the patient, you come up with a reasonable solution. It's very reasonable that she can get the whole workup done at the surgeon. They're very capable people as well. And yeah, if I could have done the normal visit, the HPI, the physical, of course I would have at that point said, yes, let's get a CT. So I guess that's the only thing that kind of rubbed me wrong is when the, not so much the board came back just saying, you didn't do a CT, you didn't do a physical. I'm like, okay, well, I have to be able to do, you can't have a patient that's not allowing you to move forward with your exam. But if they do that and put up a wall and they're not going to let me move forward with the exam, I still need to make sure they get taken care of. And that's my job. So.
Thank you, Dr. Foy. Just a couple of basics, and I have some questions for the board. I agree with you, don't necessarily need to do a CT or even labs, but within the Arizona revised statutes, does include a history and a physical examination, and ordering images and labs as appropriate. So, of course, that would lead to the question if they're appropriate, but the basic tenets of the Arizona revised statutes certainly is violated. I understand that you're providing a referral, which is also appropriate and also under the standard of care. But the question is, what should you have done before that? My perspective is different, which is why I have a question for the board. My standards is a medical screening examination, which obviously involves the basics, history, examination as appropriate, lab and imaging as appropriate. But I'd like to hear from our family practice members here, primary care, as far as what is and is outside of the standard of care as far as this is concerned. Dr. Cunningham, I know you have an opinion.
Well, I was going to let Dr. Walker go first.
That's fine. Right.
We'll let ladies go first. Let's let Dr.
All
Walker
right.
go.
All right. Well, thank you. good morning, Dr. Foy. And I, as a family practitioner, I do sympathize with your situation and empathize entirely. These patients are difficult. They come in, they have a demand, they know what they want, and then the outcome does not become what they think it was to be because they're not a physician. And now ultimately they're upset with you. And so, it really is the soft shoe dance of family practice. And that, with medical liability, as well as how to keep the insurance happy, as well as to maintain the standard of care along with within the ARS. So in my personal experience, these type of patients, what I would have done is certainly documented, what she really wanted, why she was there, and that she refused that physical exam. But perhaps, at least where I work, I'm more rural, so I like to get those studies done so that when they do get into the surgeon, at least the ball is already rolling, and at least I feel I have attended to that medical legal risk of what if this isn't a hernia? What if this layperson hasn't properly diagnosed herself? So in my opinion, I really don't have a question for you, but in answer to Dr. Madam's question, the way I would have addressed this is what you've already said, documented well, that she's just here for a referral. She's refusing to let me examine her, but I'm going to go ahead and proceed with the diagnosis of abdominal pain to justify the CT. So that when she does get into the surgeon, that you have things ready. And then when you get the CT results, assuming she hasn't seen the surgeon, you can do the urgent referral to GYN. At least that's how I would have strategized this tough situation.
That's a great add-on. I mean, I think like I said, again, I didn't write, I should have written down if I had, because I do remember bringing up to her that she's going to need a CT or something else additional. And she also discussed, like you said, if she would be, those services be covered. And she said, well, maybe I should do that. And she was thinking about doing them all at one place. But you're right, if you can get that started, that's a very good idea. I mean, because then, yeah, I totally agree.
And if you don't mind, Dr. Choi, just to keep the meeting organized, please raise your hand. I just want to make sure we're not interrupting Dr. Walker or other person for speaking. No, I understand. It's normal conversational habits versus a meeting. It's not your fault. Yeah. I'm sorry, Dr. Walker, were you done?
I am done. Again, I don't have any questions. My recommendation, or as I've reviewed this case, is as your lawyer stated, and yourself, it's just a better documentation of the situation, but I can certainly appreciate being in your shoes. I've been there before, and it's a challenge. Dr. Cunningham, thank you.
Dr. Walker, I agree with everything you said. And Dr. Foy, we've all been put in those positions where patients say no. I think that's also our, especially being DOs, I think that we go beyond and make sure that the patient, I'm not saying that you didn't do this, I'm just saying that I'm doing this for the medical students that are listening to this too, that we make sure that the patient is examined fully. And so clearly your records are lacking for that, and I think that's a big problem with you. I think also, I'm just like Dr. Walker, I know I'm just like Dr. Walker, when I see a patient like that, okay, you're not going to be, let me examine you, okay, we're going to get you referred to a surgeon, as you requested, but let me get these studies ordered so at least we've got the ball rolling so that when they see the surgeon, then they're not waiting another few more days to get a CT scan of the abdomen. I would have done some basic labs on this patient as well, too, make sure that she's not anemic, doing all of those types of things, too. So those are the basics, being a primary care physician. Again, none of that was documented in the record, so that's where you're lacking. I do think that you're trying to do your best to try and do things better, I'm going to tell you, please be more thorough with your patients. The thing is that these are the things that, luckily, this wasn't a malignancy. Luckily, she did follow up the surgeon. I don't hear anything from you saying, hey, my office called to make sure that she showed up to her appointment. You were so concerned about her with this, having this mass, and that she did show up to the surgeon. Those are the things that worry me as a primary care doctor. This is what keeps me awake at night with patients that are what I would say difficult to deal with. And so it's our, as being primary care physicians, we're tasked with making sure those, even the difficult ones, go to where they're supposed to be and make sure that they're getting things done properly. But that's where I'm just like with Dr. Walker, I would have ordered the CT and I would have, in addition, done the labs. And then also I would, in addition, made sure that you felt that the patient did show up to their appointment. What if they had not shown up to the appointment? And this could have been a much worse situation, especially if it had been a malignancy. And I'm sure you've learned a lot from this, doctor. And this is a life learning, being in a profession like this. And I'm sure that we won't be seeing you again for the same issue.
Greg, thank you.
And to make sure we don't forget a couple of emphases, that was perfect, Dr. Walker and Dr. Cunningham. That's what I was looking for. Thank you. But just to make sure we don't miss another emphasis, it's also fortunate the patient did not have renal failure. The patient did have hydronephrosis because of the size of the mass impinging on urine flow, which could have caused kidney failure, which can occur with minimal symptoms at first. So that, unfortunately, was just luck. One other mitigating factor I'd like to mention for you, Dr. Foy, is I think as a country, we overutilized CT, although I agree with Dr. Walker, Dr. Cunningham, I'm sure in this case I would have ordered one, but a discussion with a patient, if they would accept a delay with the associated risks and wait for the specialist appointment, which may be delayed for more appropriate imaging, would be a conversation that you could have documented but did not. So I will not 100% fault you for not ordering a CT, but if not, then make sure you explain why and discuss the patient that delays could have consequences, including metastases if this was cancerous, kidney failure in the case of this hydronephrosis, etc., and making sure you're aggressive on your HPI with documentation of no loss of appetite, no unintentional weight loss, the urinary symptoms that might have been there before seeing a specialist, etc., could have helped guide your care with this patient, but none were documented. Sorry, that was a soapbox. No. Any other questions from the board?
I just want to say one thing.
Yes, go ahead, Dr. Foy. Thank you.
I really do appreciate all the input. It's definitely helped. But like I said, as soon as I looked at what the note, I was like, I knew the patient, knew the visit, and said, yeah, I didn't put down what really happened. But there's a lot of things I could have done that now I know I need to do. So I appreciate all the input.
Thank you, Dr. Foy. And you have been practicing in this community for a long time with a lot of good reports from patients, and we do appreciate that. That being said, our job is protecting the public, of course. Any other questions from the board? If not, I'll take a motion. I'm going to ask Dr. Cunningham or Dr. Walker for a motion. Dr. Walker, would you like to go for it?
Oh, you're muted.
Still muted, Van.
I apologize. Yeah. Okay. I haven't figured out the control all with how to do that real quick. Sorry. I do apologize. Thank you for waiting. So I would like to make a motion for a non-disciplinary letter of concern for record keeping for Dr. Foy.
Do I have a second?
I have a second.
Thank you very much, Dr. Cunningham. Is there any further discussion on this case? Hearing none, all in favor, please indicate with an aye.
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 Aye. Are there any opposed? Thank you. Motion passes. Dr. Foy, thank you again for being a physician in this community. We appreciate the work that you do, and we have great expectations for you in the future.
Thanks to the board. I appreciate you listening. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Bohol, would you like to move forward?
Yes, we can move on to 5E. This is case number DO25. Hold on. Just lost it. DO25009A, James Clark. I believe Dr. Clark is signed in to speak. Dr. Clark, are you represented by legal counsel today?
We couldn't hear that, Dr. Clark.
Sorry. I can see you're talking. I think you're unmuted, but we can't hear you.
I think your microphone is on the wrong input there. If you need some time to figure that out, we can move on to the applicant case, Mr. Bohol, while you work on that, Dr. Clark, because we definitely need to hear from you, of course.
And Dr. Clark, we'll give you a call and try to walk through the technical issues.
Thank you very much, Mr. Bohol.
Thank you. Yes, we can move on to the applicant case, which is 6A, case number DO250077A, Tyler Cobbs. I believe Dr. Cobbs is signed in to speak. And you are represented by legal counsel, is that correct? Thank you. And good to see you, Mr. Carey. Thank you so much. And I will have Ms. Castro provide this case.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Good to hear from you, Ms. Castro.
Yeah. All right. Dr. Cobbs has applied for licensure. On the application, Dr. Cobbs answered yes to the following question. Have you ever been arrested for, charged with, or convicted of any felony or misdemeanor? Dr. Cobbs states that on October 26, 2014, while in college in Texas, he was charged with assault causing bodily injury. Dr. Cobbs further stated he witnessed a group of individuals causing a disturbance and vandalizing cars and attempted to de-escalate the situation. The altercation escalated and Dr. Cobbs was charged with assault causing bodily injury. Dr. Cobbs states the charges were dropped and his record was expunged. No documentation was available from the Wichita County Sheriff's Office or the district clerk. of Wichita. In a response from Dr. Cobb's legal counsel, he states he is not required to disclose the arrest pursuant to Texas state law and ARS 13911. Dr. Cobb's was issued a postgraduate training permit from May 30th, 2024 to June 30th of 25. On the application for the postgraduate training permit, he did not disclose that arrest. Dr. Cobbs also holds a license in Oklahoma issued July of 2020 and has no disciplinary action. Staff has confirmed with the Oklahoma Board that Dr. Cobbs answered no to all questions regarding his professional and personal conduct on the license renewal. However, they were unable to confirm any disclosures made on that initial application.
Thank you very much, Lindsay. I appreciate it. Dr. Cobbs or Mr. Carey, would you like to speak first?
Yes, thank you, Dr. Mehta, members of the board. This is sort of a unique area of law. We've only had a seal in Arizona on criminal records for about 2 years, but Texas has had it for a longer period. And their expunction law says specifically that when an expunction order is final, the person arrested may deny the occurrence of the arrest and the existence of the expunction order. So the only instance where someone has to actively acknowledge that they've been arrested is in a criminal case pending in Texas when you're a witness. So there's the case law and the statute support the fact that he didn't actually have a reporting obligation. It's kind of ironic because he did report it when he applied for his full licensure, and that's why we're here. But the law in Texas does not require it. And obviously Arizona would need to give, in our opinion, full faith and credit to another state's decision. But I also did note in our documentation that under our own statute, 13911, a person whose records are sealed, because we don't have expunction, may state in all instances that the person has never been arrested for, charged with, or convicted of the crime. So both states recognize that there is a legal avenue in which one can actually say they have not been arrested. It's a little strange in the sense of, you know, it's going back and it's changing what has occurred, but the law does allow it, and it was a law that was passed in both states. In addition, I would note that there was this case was noticed up for a violation of crimes involving moral turpitude. The statute for moral turpitude doesn't involve assault. It's not one of the violations that's listed under the Arizona law for moral turpitude. And then I also provided the board, you've heard me say this a bunch of times when we've been in these criminal cases, analysis on the two big cases, which is Winters and Webb, that just talk about the fact that there's not, based upon the allegations, a nexus between the practice of DO and the criminal act. And so it would be inappropriate to discipline merely because the underlying act occurred. And I provided you the law on that. I don't think it's the primary issue on this case. I would just say that based on, as a matter of law, it does appear that Texas law and Arizona law both allowed him to say no on a disclosure, and even though he did actually disclose it to the board. So we'd ask for a grant of licensure.
I appreciate it, Mr. Carey. Dr. Cobbs, would you like to speak?
I just want to apologize for really the discrepancy on my training license versus the unrestricted license. I don't know exactly why I answered no on the disclosure previously. I was a senior fellow taking call and trying to get audition rotation set up in addition to applying for advanced endoscopy fellowship. So it may have just been oversight on my part reading the question and seeing that it said arrest versus conviction. So, again, I take responsibility and apologize for that part and appreciate the board hearing me out today.
Well, Dr. Cobbs, you hit probably on the primary salient point to this whole conversation, is that the application only has a handful of questions, and the questions, if in doubt, there is a contact number, I believe, to the executive staff, including Mr. Bohong, if I remember that correctly, Mr. Bohong, so you can get clarity. Is that correct, Mr. Bohong?
That is correct, sir.
So anytime that there's a question of how to answer a question, I think it's a reasonably intelligent person's obligation and expectation that they will seek further information either by contacting legal counsel or by contacting the associated board. If you contact the board and ask if a sealed versus expunged record is something you have to answer on, then that helps us understand that, A, you read the question, but more importantly, that you're an honest physician, and obviously honesty is very important on an application and with a physician in the care of medicine, because we have to be able to trust you, as does the public. Mr. Monaghan, if I could ask a question of you, is the question itself a legitimate question, or does a physician in Arizona have the right to answer in the negative for a question if a case has been sealed?
If the board would like to go into executive session, I'd be happy to discuss that. I'm not necessarily comfortable discussing it on the open record.
That's not a problem at all. I'd like to make a motion to move to executive session for legal advice.
Second.
The second, Oliver. Any opposed? Please, Mr. O'Hall, move us to executive session.
Okay, you should receive the link right now. Okay, we have all six board members present. Dr. Cobbs and Mr. Carey are present, so we can resume.
Thank you very much. Two questions, one for Dr. Cobbs and one for Mr. Bohol. Dr. Cobbs, just for the public record, could you just tell me what year did this incident occur and about how old were you?
I believe I was 22 years old. This happened prior to even medical school when I was in college, I think 2013 or 14.
Go ahead, sorry.
It was October of 2013 or 14, I believe.
Oh, no, approximate's absolutely fine. Thank you very much. I know we all have these. Mine might not have been perfect either. Mr. Bohol, could you please remind me as to sealing of records, qualifications, and exceptions under Item J?
Yes. So Item 5 of the statute regarding sealing of records in Arizona states that the individual may, in all instances, that they've never been arrested, charged with, or convicted of a crime unless any of the following applies. And Item Number J is the disclosure is required by a state or federal law.
And I would just note, Chair, that that's never actually been litigated. Regarding state or federal law, what that actually means. And so we're aware of that. I would take the position that, first of all, this is Texas. This is Texas law, which does not have that exception. The only time you have to disclose it in Texas.
Mr. Carey, can I stop you for a moment? Sure. And the only reason I ask that of you is you're just running up the bill for this poor doctor. What I'd like to just say something real quick for you here. Sure. And if you have an objection with that afterwards, please raise your hand. I don't want to speak again. Is that okay? So, Dr. Cobbs, you and I are not lawyers, and listening to the debate of these certainly gives me great sympathy for you here. That being said, I mentioned before in the case that you're answering a question and something's come up before and you have concerns, then please contact the appropriate person. Contact the board. The board will also have answers to questions for you here. Help keep you honest, because I have been through those things several times. That being said, I would like to make a motion to grant you an unrestricted license in Arizona.
Second, Doug Cunningham.
I have a second. Thank you very much. Is there any further discussion? Did I rain on your parade, Mr. Carey? Are you okay?
You know, one of the art of this is knowing when to keep your mouth shut. So I read into it. I think I got it right. So I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you very much. All in favor, please indicate with an aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you. Dr. Cobbs, we really appreciate your efforts in appearing in front of the board and your professional and heartfelt response. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Bohol, are we ready to move back to
early E? Yep, E, case number DO-250009A, James Clark. Staff has been on the phone with him. I believe we corrected the issue. Dr. Clark, would you mind turning on your camera and unmuting and so we can speak with you? Thank you, Dr. Clark.
Now I can see you're on mute, Dr. Clark.
How's that? Can you hear us, Dr. Clark?
Okay. Do you hear my audio now?
Yes,
we do. Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Okay, so I'm using the cell phone, and I'm in a deep, old building in a valley. So I'm probably going to be limited, and let me try to figure out where my – I got multiple monitors and cameras. I'm trying to figure out where to look. Is it okay?
You're looking in the right direction. Thank you very much, okay. Dr. Clark. I appreciate it. Could we swear in Dr. Clark, please?
Dr. Clark, will you please raise your right hand? Do you swear under penalty of perjury to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Boho, who's presenting this case?
This will be Dr. Prah.
Oh, I apologize. I forgot to ask. Dr. Clark, do you have counsel with you?
No, I do not.
Very good. Dr. Prof, please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. This The case was reviewed by a board-certified radiologist. The Arizona Board of Osteopathic Examiners was notified of the reduction of Dr. James Clark's clinical privileges from the Northern Arizona VA healthcare system. After a peer review, Dr. Clark's privileges for interpreting body CT, MRI of the chest, abdomen, and pelvis all were revoked. We sent 8 cases to the OMC, and of the 8 cases that he reviewed, unfortunately, two had no imaging provided by the VA. 4 had major misinterpretations, all of which may have resulted in delay of care or patient harm. And 2, the OMC felt that there was no misinterpretation by Dr. Clark. In these 4 cases that he had concern about, 1 was case 2, and that he felt that Dr. Clark missed a right prostate mass versus abscess with enlarged pelvic lymph nodes. He felt this could have resulted in delay of care and potential patient harm. Case 4, he felt Dr. Clark missed a suspicious renal mass and probable renal cell carcinoma. He noted this was a major misinterpretation with significant potential patient harm and injury. The OMC noted he was concerned with Dr. Clark's interpretation abilities and deductive reasoning in this case. He states Dr. Clark included a renal adenoma, a benign renal tumor, in his differential, which has none of the imaging features presented in this case. He states this should be a renal cell carcinoma until proven otherwise. He states this could be misleading to the clinician, making him or her feel that this could be a benign tumor, requiring no follow-up and thus potential patient harm. He was also concerned about case number 7, which he felt represented another major misinterpretation with delay in care and patient harm. The OMC stated that Dr. Clark failed to recognize that this particular case was a suspicious prostate or bladder mass with enlarged pelvic lymph nodes. He notes there was a 5-month delay of care, which could have been clinically significant, resulting in potential worsening of the metastatic disease and patient harm. He was also concerned about case 8, which he felt represented another major misinterpretation with serious potential patient harm. He notes Dr. Clark's original interpretation was performed on October 16, 2023, where he missed a large ground glass nodule in the left upper lobe. He states Dr. Clark later added an addendum on March 20, 2024, which was 5 months later. He states he added another addendum to his report, which was convoluted and difficult to follow. He states one of the addenda stated he favored his nodule to be scarring with potential for bronchoalveolar cancer. He states that the suggestion that this could be scarring was inappropriate and misleading, which could have led to delay of care and potential patient harm. Our OMC did note that the best radiologists have a miss rate of 3 to 5%. He states, having said that, he was concerned about a few of the cases read by Dr. Clark, who had errors in interpretation where he made the finding but failed to recognize the importance of what it was, which in turn resulted in failure to suggest the next appropriate workup or delay of care. He states this peer review did not include any ultrasound, x-rays, or other modalities, which could mean that these cases could have been cherry-picked. He felt Dr. Clark fell below the standard of care in the review, did show some deficits in imaging interpretation and communication, as his reports are sometimes confusing and show a lack of direction for the ordering provider. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Pra. And before we get back to you, Dr. Clark, just for clarity, Dr. Pra, those cases reviewed there were from the body of the peer review, or are those cases that we picked at random?
No, they were from the peer review at the VA.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Correct.
I appreciate it, Pra. Thank you very much, Dr. Clark, and I appreciate you taking the time to troubleshoot your IT issues. What would you like to respond with? Thank you for your time.
Can I respond, you said?
Yes, please. Go ahead.
Okay. A lot of this is going to come down to data, how data is used. But first, let me say, I think it's inappropriate to blame others to say that this is all, that, you know, I'm not at fault. Radiologists do have differences in interpretation, how we see things, what we find. And I was actually quite shocked when the reviewer said it is kind of the national norm that 3 to 5% errors in radiologists. I'm sure you guys as providers are probably shocked to hear that yourself. So if you have your average radiologist that's reading 100 cases a day, 5 of those are going to be incorrect, and that's kind of normal. I was actually very shocked to find that. But back to my case in general, ever since I started this place, I've been told or was told by previous radiologists that they have a system of weaponization of how they use their peer review process. When I first started here, Dr. Duskar had already had her abdominal or CT privileges changed and removed, and she said, "This is, if they don't like you, the administration does not like you, this is how they do it." And eventually she was forced out after a couple of years. And before this current case of review that had done on me, they tried this 3 years ago. I don't know where the origination of it came from, but they said it had like an error rate of like 25, some insane percent. And then when they showed me the cases and I had a chance to look at some of the data in it, it literally was only CT. There was, I believe, one MRI, zero X-ray, zero DEXA, zero ultrasound. So it was there's no way around. This was a skewed data set, clearly cherry-picking. And from that, they requested a further review. And I believe the number was 500 cases that they had reviewed by it. And I think out of that total of 500 cases, they had 4 that were of concern. And to even really call those of concern is kind of stretching it. Some of these were just, I'd say, frivolous. Like one of them was that I didn't mention a 6th pulmonary nodule. This person had multiple pulmonary nodules, and I literally described the largest, most suspicious nodule in each of the 5 lobes. And they said, well, you should describe the 6th one. Even the one that they reviewed, there was nothing significant. So that was one attempt where they did that before, and they failed. And then they tried this again. This time it was sent to a different location. The VA has this outside body called NTP, where the after hours is kind of like the Nighthawk of radiology goes. And that's where it was sent, this data set. And I assumed, falsely and correctly, that this group that would do this outside review would be the people that were choosing the cases. And I found out later that was absolutely not the case. Everything that was sent there was chosen by the local administration. And again, as your reviewer kind of said, there was absolute skewing again. The things that I do, the largest majority of cases are X-ray, ultrasound, and the neuro, predominantly the neuro MRI. And there's almost none of that represented inside of that. And the next step after that, so after I started raising my concerns to the staff, the chief of staff and other members inside of the VA architecture, they changed the system to how reviews were done. Before, it was literally a list would be sent to you, and you'd say, okay, review the cases on this person. So somebody literally would go in, choose the cases, and then just, okay, here you assign it to you. So the new system is supposedly done completely random, and I'll get it during the daytime on my machine. If I read a case on somebody, it'll just pick a previous that on that patient that I already have open and say, hey, can you do a review of this? You know, give it the 1, 2, 3. And that's been initiated now, I think, for getting close to 3/4 to a year. Since they've started this new process that doesn't have this data set skewing, 0. No complaints of anything in particular, but there's one little side fact on it. After getting my review back, they had a complaint for my punctuation. Nothing about my reads, nothing about the quality, not for the differentials or anything. The only thing that negative came back that I needed to watch my punctuation. So I didn't even describe that. Was it run-on sentences? Was it too many commas? And that's the only thing that has occurred since we've added this new system of how peer reviews are done. And as far as the thing that really matters the most to me, I don't really work for the veterans. I don't see it. I don't do interventional anymore. We don't do any fluoroscopy cases. I work for the providers. And those are the people that are most important to me, their thoughts and their opinions on me. I have the best relationships of any of the people in this building that do imaging. Everybody in the ER considers me their go-to person, the floors, the acute care, the nurse practitioners, the PAs, the MDs, and the DOs that are in the primary care. I have no issues with them. No one questions me. I am their person. My biggest thing that I say this is not fully on me completely is that I have the approval of the most important people, my providers. And to go on that, when they started this whole process, even before it went too far, I said, you know, I actually rescinded my privileges before they took remove them. The other two radiologists here are both fellowship-trained body imagers. So it's like, perfect. Those guys can handle doing that. I tend to do the vast heavy weight of – I do probably 95% of the ultrasound, and I do nearly all of the neuro the MRI and CT neuro cases. So I just, you know, said, fine, let that go. I really didn't fight that. There is a little bit of side caveat, too, because some of this, you know, why are they targeting me? Everybody wants to be the victim. Hey, this is not my fault. It's somebody else. I was actually a whistleblower for the federal government against how they were spending funding on the CT and MRI machines here. And I just felt it was inappropriate how they were skewing the contract to provide for only one vendor and they've been eliminating other vendors. And that kind of got me the ire of the administration. They didn't like that I was trying to get the best machine for the best cost for both the veterans and us as taxpayers. So that's kind of, you know, if you want to say, hey, why is this guy being singled out? Why is he being this guy that, you know, they're attacking? Potential one of the reasons. And right now I'm not doing any of the body. And it came up, they said they removed my body MRI privileges. I almost never read those cases. I let the other person that was the body fellowship trained MRI guy, I maybe once a year when he was gone, I would do an abdominal liver MRI. I never did chest, never touched a chest, so they say they removed that from me, but I never did it. And in the future, if the things get a little more quieter around here, and I can, if I choose to elect to go back and reestablish my privileging for CT, I'll never do MRI body, that's for fellows. But if I choose to go back and get my body or CT, I'll heavily do CME, and I'm also considering if I really want to do it more and we really have a need because maybe our staffing changes and we really do need a radiologist here to read body CT, I would probably do a mini fellowship. And I guess that's what I have to say.
Well, I appreciate that, Dr. Clark. That was very thorough. I appreciate you mentioning that you're not perfect, as we all know none of us are, and there certainly is an error rate. And I appreciate you bringing up not wanting to shift blame off of yourself, as we all make errors. Mr. Goodman knows how much I appreciate that. That being said, do I have any questions or comments from the board?
Yeah.
Dr. Clark, I'm sorry, you had another question or statement?
Yes, I forgot. There's one thing that you mentioned in your initial about the question with that nodule. You know, I guess it was case number 4, the last one that was spoke of, the ground glass opacity. And they're trying to say, you know, how my dictation was convoluted and difficult to follow. It's hard to do an addendum for something because I found an old study that predated that at an outside location. Another study had been done after my initial one that was read, and that radiologist basically said the same thing that I did. So it's weird to do an addendum when you kind of already know the answer to what happened. So I'll agree that it was convoluted, it was kind of confusing, but it is hard to do with that temporal line a reasonable interpretation when you've got these jumps of time. It's like watching a Star Wars movie and you're seeing the prequels and the trilogies, and it all doesn't make sense. So I apologize for how that one went together, but that was an oddity just because of the timing of having old images that showed stability, a follow-up study done after my interpretation but before my addendum where the radiologist said the same thing. So I apologize for that. I wanted to throw that in. Sorry about that.
Thank you very much, Dr. Clark. Appreciate it. I got to say, I don't love convoluted reports when I try to read them. So anytime you can be concise, we appreciate it. However, I never do look at reports 5 months later. I'm an emergency room doctor, not a primary care. My primary care colleagues might have a different opinion on that. But do we have any questions or comments from the board?
I do, Dr. Meadham.
Yes.
Good morning, Dr. Clark. This is Dr. Walker. I'm family practice, certainly not a radiologist, but just reviewing your file, I did have just a couple questions. There was a comment from the reviewer about you adding an addendum, and I believe it was about five months after the original report was created. And I'm curious as to why you would have felt compelled to add an addendum 5 months later, and what is the standard of care for a radiologist as far as time frame for adding an addendum, a timely addendum?
Okay, that is the exact nodule I was just speaking of, the one that had the ground glass opacity. So when they did this review, they gave me this one, and they asked me to do an addendum on it. And then it was at that time that when they asked me to do the addendum that I had discovered that there was an older study even predating my original interpretation, and also within the time from my original interpretation until they asked me to do that addendum, a study had been done through the ER, and it showed that nodule has an area of the ground glass opacity nodule is actually being stable. So the reason it was done 5 months later is because they asked me to do it. And again, that's where the convolution came in, because I actually had a prequel before my original interpretation, and then I had a postquel, whatever you want to call it, that basically recapitulated my findings and the stability of the structure, if that helps.
Okay. No, it does help, because the way I had understood it, it was that it was several patients and several studies, so that offers clarity. So I apologize that your prior explanation to my question, you already answered my question, and you're correct, it was convoluted. So thank you for that clarity. And I'm also a little confused. So what is your relationship with the VA at this time? You are working for them, or you're trying to get back in with them, and why would you want to continue with this environment?
I'm here right now. I'm actually one of the only two radiologists here today. I'm covering strokes. I'm doing all the MRIs, the CTs. So I am still here with it. I would like to stay with this place. I enjoy, you know, what I do with the people that I do. I have so many great friends in this community. I've been in the Prescott area for 15-plus years. I came to the VA 6 years ago. So I have so many friends and colleagues and associates. I don't want to leave here. I really enjoy the place here. I just wish we could have an environment that just wasn't so antagonistic. And this has been since the day one that my boots hit the ground. I was told by this Dr. Dusko I described earlier that I was kind of not wanted here by other radiologists because a couple things. I was a male. I was married. I was a DO, and that was actually specifically told, and then also wasn't fellowship trained. So they kind of wanted their little niche radiologist that was single and female, and I don't fit that bill by a long degree. So I would like to stay here. I've got 6 years in. I would love to stay long enough here to retire out of here and stay in the Prescott area. That's my intent. But, no, I'm actually boots on the ground right now reading studies.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Meadham, I don't have any other questions at this time.
Thank you, Dr. Walker. I appreciate it. Are further questions or comments from the board? Go ahead, Dr.
Cunningham. I don't have any. This is Doug Cunningham. All right, so does somebody else need to go? I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, please.
I don't really have any questions from the doctor. I think he's done a really good explanation of the events where he's working and so forth. My observation is, though, you know, we are to protect the public. So our consultant has raised some concerns, and so I'm just wondering if an evaluation just would be appropriate, whatever that may be, whatever the board decides, just to, again, he, like he said, he's there today doing everything now, not just doing ultrasounds and so forth. He's doing MRIs and CTs, that we make sure that everything is appropriately being done to satisfy the board for our fund of knowledge for this particular doctor. I'm not saying he has any deficit. I'm just saying that I think for to be confirmed for our board and for protecting the public, that would be something that I would wish the board would consider.
Dr. Cunningham, you are absolutely correct. I am not convinced that the peer review process is pure, and I cannot 100% count on it. That being said, we have in front of us a concern from the outside medical consultant. So we are obligated at this point to assure, as you said, the public is safe. I certainly do not necessarily believe that the doctor is unsafe, but there's enough of a question that I'd like to move forward with a motion for an interim order for an evaluation, be it PACE or whatever equivalent body that the executive director can find for an evaluation for fund of knowledge.
I would second that, Dr. Madam.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I apologize, Dr. Clark. You had a further question or comment?
Well, he was saying that I was doing CTs today. I am only during the neuro cases. Before they even removed my privileges, I voluntarily rescinded my body CT. So I'm not reading body CT. The other gentleman that's here today with me, he's a fellowship trained. So I'm not touching anything that's body. The ER predominantly produces head CTs and necks and lumbar and spines. So I'm not shirking my duties. I'm still doing the vast majority of CT. I'm just not doing the body. So that part that they questioned me on, I don't touch anymore.
I appreciate that. No, I understand if you've had a restriction of privileges, you can't do that. I understand. Thank you. Any further questions or comments from the board?
No.
If not, we have a motion and a second. Favor, could you please indicate with an aye? Oh, I'm sorry. Do I need a roll call for that? No, I don't. Do I, Mr. Bohan?
You do not need a roll call.
Thank you very much. All in favor, indicate with an aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Dr. Clark, please contact Mr. Bohan. He'll help you with moving forward. I understand we have a shortage of radiologists, and if you can safely do your job, which I certainly hope and have the feeling you can, we definitely want to make sure you keep having the opportunity to do that. And thank you for serving our public, especially in the Prescott area. Mr. Bohal, where would you like to move to? Thank you, Dr. Clark. Where would you like to move to next?
If you'd like to do the consent agenda, and while we're doing the consent agenda, we can invite the medical students to join us. I did want to let you know that we do have 75 students joining us today, so we're very excited about that.
That's amazing. And I'm going to try to move back onto my network. I split my 5 and 2.4 gigahertz, so we'll see if that works. I'm going to log off of the cellular call here. So give me just one moment.
Sure.
Okay, hopefully my IT skills were a little bit more successful this time. I apologize for the prior problems. Trying to troubleshoot network connectivity can be a real bear. Anyway, we're moving on to the consent agenda, I believe.
Yes. So this is item number 7 on the agenda. This is consideration and action on proposed consent agenda for dismissal or other action. All 5 cases are listed for issuing a letter of concern to resolve these cases. If the board would like to discuss any particular case, any board member can request that that be removed, and we will reschedule that, provide notice to the doctor, and schedule it for a future meeting. If there's no cases that need to be pulled, then the motion would be to accept the consent agenda as presented, and all 5 cases will be closed with letters of concern.
I was comfortable with the consent agenda as written. Are there any other concerns from the board members? If not, I'll take a motion.
I make a motion that we accept the consent agenda as presented.
Thank you, Ms. Pichel. Do I have a second?
Second, Dr. Walker.
Well, we have to give that to Mr. Goodman. I don't think he got a second in there yet. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor, please indicate with an aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Any opposed? Thank you very much. Motion passes.
Perfect. Thank you. And now I think we have the students joining us. Student doctors, if you'd like to turn on your cameras, the board is ready to have a conversation with you.
Thank you very much to all the medical students who have joined us. We tried to keep the meeting not all day because I'm sure everybody wants to go outside in the 105 or 110 degree temperatures, whatever it is today. Our board meetings here are very specifically for protecting the public. We spend a long time reviewing these cases and do our best to fairly interact. We have a complement of physicians and public members too. If you've noticed from the from your windows there, and we have a full-time support staff who actually does most of the hard work. You've heard from Ms. Castro and Mr. Bohall, as well as our counsel, Mr. Monaghan. And we have a lot more board members who are behind the scenes. So this is a big process. Oh, I'm sorry, Dr. Pry, I didn't mention you. This is certainly a large process that we take very seriously and try to get most of our homework done before the meeting so we can run this so concisely. So thank you very much to the board members for being abreast of all the cases. That just gives you a little bit of a window behind of what we do here because there's so much that you can't see. You only get to see the 4 hours or so, or sometimes 10 hours. I think, Dr. Cunningham, you were in with me with one of the longest meetings. It was 10 or 12 hours. I forgot that what that was. It was not
a It was a record. That's all I remember. It was a record.
I remember that it was dark when we left.
Yes.
So we try not to do that. But that being said, we do what we have to do. So I'd love to hear if you all have any questions. But before we get to that, while you're thinking of all these questions, because the rule of the board meeting is if nobody has any question, the board gets to pick people over here and ask them questions. But before we get to that, Dr. Pra, you always have some important information to tell us. Would you like to take a moment now?
Certainly. Thank you, Dr. Maiden.
Of course.
Well, I guess first I'd like to start off, since we have so many students here today, I'd like to start off by telling you that I really feel like that you have chosen one of the most fascinating and really rewarding careers you could ever imagine. I know you kind of know that, but looking at it from this side, looking back, you recognize that we're really privileged, really, really. It's very, very cool profession. Can really help people and make a difference in people's lives, which is what we really all want to do. You were chosen because you are caretakers. We all love to help other people. Often, however, in our caretaking, we forget to take care of ourselves. And that's really easy. You can see how easy that is to when you're in the middle of medical school. There's so much to do. But even when you're out, it's a very challenging profession. What you may not know now, but you will soon learn, is that just by completing medical school, you will enter into kind of a unnamed club. Because there's genuine and undeniable respect that we all have for each other just because we've gotten through it. Nobody else really knows what it takes to get through school and residency. Nobody can understand it unless they're in it. It's grueling. It's emotional. The long hours, the lack of sleep, the certain sacrifices that you make, and then, of course, the love that you have for your patients. We're held to a higher standard, though. We often forget that we're human. At the board, you can see that 5 board members are physicians and 2 are lay people. We all understand that we're all just human and that we have normal human frailties. That's the reason that many years ago, we created a confidential physicians program. And this allows a physician or a student physician to report to the board any substance abuse issues or mental health issues without any kind of ding on your license. As long as there's been no patient harm and there's no legal issues, a physician can be evaluated, and if necessary, they can be placed in a confidential program in which they undergo treatment and monitoring for whatever period of time the expert recommends. The term of probation, as I said, is determined usually by suggestion of the expert that is the evaluator. The confidential program exists to allow physicians to become healthy again without risk to their license or malpractice insurance or hospital privileges. Because I don't think, I have probably spoken to most of you in your first year, but in case you've forgotten, if you are not in the confidential program and it goes to the non-confidential program, then it's reported to the National Practitioner Data Bank, which is a national, just exactly what the name describes, it's a data bank that keeps track of any disciplinary action that has occurred against a physician. And why do you think we have that? It's to keep people from going state to state and being able to get a license in another state because if they lost their license in one. So there's plenty of guardrails that we have in our program. So it's not that it's a free ride, because any non-compliance is met with the possibility of the confidentiality being withdrawn. It is a really great program, though, and I encourage you that if you have any kind of difficulties or you know someone that does, please encourage them to seek help now. Because I know that, as I always say, it seems like you're really busy when you're in medical school, and you are, but it doesn't really get much less busy, unfortunately. I know you think it's going to, but it really doesn't. And last but not least, do not drive drunk. If you decide that you're going to go out with your friends and you're going to drink alcohol, please make sure that you have a rideshare or have a designated driver. And that's all I have. Thank you, Dr. Maiden, for allowing me the time.
Oh, really appreciate it, Dr. Pra. And you're right, this is actually one of the rare meetings. We have not had one case that involved driving while impaired. Very, very good point. I'm just so used to it, I forgot to even mention that we didn't have that today. Any other board members wish to address the medical students?
Just one thing. And just to tag along with Dr. Cross said, and again, what is the one thing you do if you've had one drink of alcohol? Please call Uber or Lyft, okay? Don't take a risk. Remember, you saw that earlier today, and I can't say anything about the case. But anyway, you've got to report something, and that will follow you for the rest of your life, even when you apply for privileges to hospitals, insurance plans, whatever city you go to, that will follow you. So don't take that risk. And if you have a friend or a colleague that's there with you in school, or if you have a problem yourself, you know, this is the time to take care of it. Don't come before the board. Like Dr. Maiden said, we didn't have any of those cases today. But if you do have a friend, please take them aside. You may cost a friendship, but you will be helping them in the long run. And so I would encourage you all to do those things. Do be safe. You're going to be excellent physicians in the future. You're the future of the osteopathic profession. And so I wish you all the very best.
That's fantastic, Dr. Cunningham. I really appreciate it. And like I mentioned briefly before, we have public members on board here. The medical board's here to protect the public, so it's not just the opinion of the physicians. We need the opinions of non-physicians, too, because their perspectives can be different from those who've spent a huge percentage of their time practicing medicine and learning medicine. Do our public members have anything they'd like to bring up to these fine medical students?
Sure, Dr. Madam. I'm happy to share. I will also piggyback on Dr. Prah and Dr. Cunningham about substance abuse. I can tell you from personal experience, drug addiction and substance abuse is very difficult and damaging and has long-term repercussions that I don't know that any of you want to have impacting your career. I also know from personal experience that it's very difficult to get clean once you've been clean or once you've started. And I hope that none of you are headed that way now, but if you are, please do seek help as quickly as possible and seek help for your friends as quickly as possible. It's much better that they hate you than, you know, they kill themselves or hurt themselves or someone else. Likewise with, driving, it's definitely not worth it. In any case, you don't actually have to be drunk to get a DUI. It's just not worth it. And we don't want to see you like that. We're not going to be nice to you if we do. I personally think it's really good that people are open and honest about things like drugs and substance abuse, and that we encourage an environment where people can speak about it openly. That's what I do. I'm an attorney. I don't hide it from other attorneys. I think if I can talk about it and help at least one other person, then it's been worth talking about. And I encourage all of you to do the same. There's a very good chance that if you are not yourselves struggling, you know somebody personally who is or has been. Just consider the damaging impacts those people have on their own lives and the lives of their families, and take that with you. Life is going to get more challenging for you, not less. So just, take care of yourselves.
Thank you, Mr. Goodman. I really appreciate that. Any other comments from the board before we give these medical students a chance to ask us questions? So, Dr. Cunningham said, we can't answer questions specifically about a case, but general questions we can answer. Hopefully you'll never have the opportunity to ask questions or be in front of the board ever again, unless you have the privilege of being a board member. But please, go ahead, ask any questions you have. We have a wide and diverse board who's more than happy to help.
I have more of a basic question.
Sure. Can you hear me? Yes, absolutely, Mr. McCoy. Go ahead.
How often are you required to update the board with, new information? Do you have a time period for, if you move or you change phone numbers or something like that to update the board?
That's a great question. Mr. Bohol, would you like to go over that? That's very astute.
Absolutely. We generally request that any updates to phone numbers or addresses be done within 30 days of any change. The times that are really, really important for that information are during renewal season. So that opens up somewhere around October 1st. We've been trying to open it a little bit earlier each year. So sometime in September or October, you'll receive notice that it's time to renew your license. And if we don't have an updated address or we don't have an updated email, that information is not getting to you. And then if you don't renew your license timely, there's late fees. And if you don't renew it by May 1st, then it'll expire. And we know that that's not always the best option for our individuals, but we do have to have some sort of documentation to handle that. So, 30 days to answer your question. But if you ever have a question about it, just give my staff a call. We're happy to kind of walk through any of those issues or clarify anything.
Yeah. Thank you. If I can, Dr. Manum, I'll add to that. And thank you, Justin. It's your license. You're responsible for taking care of it. It's what's going to allow you to continue doing what you are trying to do now. So if there's something, you know, that's going to impede facilitating communication between us and you or you and us, update us. You're not going to, we're not going to ding you for sharing too much information. So you don't want to find yourself in a situation where we do need to call you and we can't reach you.
So. We've had that. Dr. Chabon?
And Justin, on those same, same lines, just so that the, can you hear me okay? A little echoing.
Yes. Yeah.
Just so that the medical students are aware, can you talk to them about what other instances they may need to notify the board as far as legal actions, things like that, in what timely manner so that they're aware of that going forward?
Thank you for that. Yes. If you are the subject of a malpractice complaint, it's really helpful if you guys let us know ahead of time, even if the settlement hasn't been made, so that we can track it. And if there is a case that needs to be opened, we can open it and maybe review it. But that's helpful for us for medical malpractice. Another one, you are required within 10 days to notify the board if you are arrested or charged with any crime. That may affect the osteopathic practice. It's important that if you ever question, should I report this criminal charge or not, default to telling or calling us, at least asking, so that we can kind of give you our review of it. As Dr. or Mr. Goodman stated, we won't penalize you for providing too much information. If you get us the information, we can actually do something about it. And it goes much better when we have that information.
Well said. Thank you very much. And I apologize. I should have said student Dr. McCoy. You've earned that title. Thank you. Any other questions from the medical students? Mind, I got to ask more questions. How much time do you get to spend with the medical board here? Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Student Dr. Bonet, I'm sorry. And then student Dr. Aguilar?
Yeah, it's Bonet. You did it right.
Bonet? Good. All right.
So if there hasn't been like a formal complaint against you, nobody's pursued like law action against you, but let's say they like escalate something to House Soup and you have a feeling it might be headed that direction, should we let you guys know?
Mr. Bohal, would you like to take that? That's a good question. I like that.
You can be very proactive in that. Oftentimes, I'll give an example. We've had someone contact us and say, oh, I just found out that someone's possibly used my DEA without permission. And so we will actually document that, put that in the file so that if a complaint ever comes around, we can go, oh, they did their due diligence, notified us, we're aware of the situation. So, yes, that's very helpful if you think that's going that way.
Perfect. Thank you very much. Good question. And student Dr. Aguilar?
Yes. My question was, as the physicians on the board, do you have to have any other qualifications? Like, for example, a number of service years in your respective field?
So it is a governor-appointed position. So this is something where we apply to the Arizona Osteopathic Medical Board and go through a selection process. So there's going to be a selection process where each candidate is evaluated on their years of service and specialty, along with the needs of the board. So we try to spread out, the governor's office does, try to spread out the qualifications of the board. So we don't have just emergency medicine, such as myself, even though that is the best specialty, but we still need primary care and family practice, I should say, and multiple other specialties. What else do you have for that, Mr. Bohal?
I was just going to say that when you apply, we do request that you be actively engaged in patient care. That is a requirement. And I believe it's 5 years. You've had to have your license for 5 years before you can apply. But as Dr. Maynham stated, it's through the governor's office. You would apply through them. They have a training video that you would complete and then do an interview process and a background check with them.
I'll take that as a compliment. Dr. Cunningham is an excellent and experienced physician. Thank you, Mr. Bohal. And those regulations do vary from state to state. I don't remember which states, but some states have retired physicians also as members of the board, and I think it's under their physician members, not under members of the public, too. But Arizona does have its own regulations. Any other questions from the medical students? So let me just say, just for closing, like Dr. Pra had mentioned, that you guys have picked a amazing and fantastic and fulfilling profession. It's easy to forget that sometimes in medical school you spend so much time studying and your head's down all the time and not having any time for yourself. It's just really important every morning or evening, depending on your shift, you get up. Just take a moment to thank yourself for creating this opportunity, because you created this opportunity for yourself through a lot of hard work. You got here this far because of all your hard work, and you are going to be able to use that to help the public, to save lives, to keep people healthy and functional longer. So please use your experience, not just as a doctor, but specifically your osteopathic skills. Treat the whole patient. Be holistic. Treat the body, mind, and spirit. And thank you very much for coming this far with your careers. And like Dr. Cunningham said, you are the future of what we're here for. So if you have a question, please reach out and ask. We want you all to succeed very much and appreciate you spending your entire morning minus 2 minutes with us. All right, get out of here. Have a good rest of your day.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. Mr. Bohall, where would you like to move to next?
If we can move to item number 9A, this is the discussion on medical spa and IV hydration clinics, guidance on standard of care. I think this is just a preliminary discussion, but I, based on the Federation of State Medical Boards, and I'm seeing other states starting to engage in providing this type of guidance, I was hoping for direction from the board on where they would like me to start, what information you need me to gather, so that you can start deciding, is this something that you want to go and manage? And I did actually have another suggestion. So the board recently created a committee on artificial intelligence, and we're starting to put that together to help provide guidance. And one of the suggestions that we received from other boards across the country is, instead of focusing solely on artificial intelligence, would be to create a committee on emerging trends, is the phrase they use. And that committee can tackle AI, IV hydration clinics, med spas, semaglutide, all of that, as new things come up, that committee can address those. So if the board would like, we could modify the existing committee, and then Dr. Madem can work on deciding who he'd like to appoint to those committees. But yes, this is just that preliminary discussion so that I get a starting point of where you want to head in that area.
And thank you very much. I like the information you've obtained, articles and information from other boards on this subject. I think that was very helpful to read through the different perspectives instead of recreating the wheel completely. So that was absolutely perfect. So for the idea of obviously safety of the public and concern with cases with medical oversight and treatment in med spas, but you're correct. I like changing it to emerging trends and to have subcommittees under each of those, including AI, medical spas, IV hydration clinics. I'd like to know if anybody is interested in working directly with Mr. Bohall instead of me appointing somebody, and starting with the med spas and IV hydration. Is anybody interested in doing work on helping collect information and helping us find direction on that?
I'd be interested.
Okay, Dr. Walker and Dr. Chapin, is that correct? All right. Mr. Bohall, if you can work with Dr. Walker and Dr. Chapin as far as how we want to split that up. And I'd just like to see that continuing flow of information, like you already started very well on that. just so we don't get our surprises, though, when we do get these cases with our concern of what proper medical direction is, what is within scope, etc.
Dr. Maynard, I'd be
yes.
happy to help with some of these kinds of things as well.
Awesome. I love it. And this is not limited just to physicians. If the public members want to get involved, I'm not saying you have to, but if anybody wants to be involved, because obviously this is something that is very much the public. So if so, just please reach out to Mr. Bohal independently. And I think that's a great starting point, Mr. Bohal.
Perfect. I will put this back on the agenda for a future meeting, and I'll be working with Dr. Walker and Dr. Chiffon on that committee.
Perfect. And Dr. Pra.
Yeah, and Dr. Pra, thank you.
That sounds perfect. Excellent.
Moving on to item 10, reports, 10A, reports from board members. Does any of the board members have anything to report right now?
I do not, except, again, I really appreciate the board being prepared. You did a fantastic job today. Dr. Cunningham? I'm sorry.
I was talking. No.
No trouble at all. Thank you very much.
Somebody was asking me a question. I'm sorry, in my office. I apologize. What was the question again?
I was just seeing if anybody had anything to report as a board member. You're good. Thank you, Mr. Bohal. You can move on.
Okay. Moving on to item 10B, the report from the executive director. In your packet, I have completed a pretty good summary of our wins throughout the year. We've had a very busy year here at the board. I'm really proud of the achievements that we've done and got a lot of things taken care of. One thing I wanted to highlight for our investigations, we had a 21% increase in cases that we were able to complete in the last fiscal year over last year. So I think we're moving in the right direction on being able to close cases in a timely manner. Our number of pending investigations has remained steady, so we're opening as quickly as we're closing them, which is good news. And the other investigative timeframes, I wanted to highlight the big drop. So in 2023, it was taking an average of 274 days. In 2024, that has diminished down to 197. And then so far in 2025, we're at 106 days. So I do believe that we are processing under 180 days, and that's the goal. We have had a 12% increase in total applications. So DOs are coming to Arizona, and we're licensing them. We're trying to process them as quickly as possible. Right now, our average is about 84 days on initial licensure, so we're working to reduce that as well. A couple new reports that I'm able to provide for you. I had some individuals ask, where are your interns and residents? What institutions are they coming from? So I was actually able to pull a report from our new system that shows where those PGT permits, our initial ones, are actually coming from. And of course, our largest one is here in the state, which is Midwestern at 73. AT Still, actually, we had 30 students from AT Still that did residencies here in Arizona. I also pulled that same information for new applications. So our largest designated was Midwestern University with 240. AT Still is 101. The largest is other, which is any of the classes that didn't have over 25 applications, or any institutions that didn't have 25 applications, and that was 366. Renewals, we had a 15% increase in post-grad training permits that were renewed. So we're seeing an increase in the number of PGT applications as well as regular applications. We had a pretty positive renewal for regular licenses. That was a well-earned, hard-fought kind of process to make those improvements. And overall, we had a 25% increase in post-grad licenses issued this year. And with that, that concludes, that concludes my report on licensing and investigations, but I did want to report that since the last board meeting, I have executively dismissed 14 cases for the board.
That's absolutely perfect. Again, this is exactly what I was looking for the reports that you're giving here, helping keep us transparent and honest. So I appreciate you working so hard, A, on getting this work done and keeping this board moving efficiently, and B, keeping this information in front of us. That's perfect. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else the board would like to see on this report besides that information presented in that beautiful graphic form, just like my power bill, like I asked 4 years ago? All right. Good job. I appreciate that to you, Mr. Bohol, and the rest of the staff.
Dr. Madam, can I just ask one question? For example, like we had that one case this morning that was back to 2022. Mm-hmm. Do you somehow group those, or if you have them that are way behind, and you bring those to Dr. Madam, do you bring them to the full board? What do you do? Because what do we do in those cases if we're they're not responding, they're not responding to you, doing those things? I know we got an answer from our AG that there's really not a lot that we can do from a disciplinary point of view, but how do you bring those forward so they're just not sitting on the back burner for 3 years, you know, I'm trying to say.
And thank you for that question. So that was part of the recommendations that came from the Auditor General's report, and we have adopted a policy and process that kind of outlines a specific time frame in which I don't want to say it's acceptable, but we can accept a certain amount of delays. But after a certain period of time, then we're going to become much more proactive. We have gotten a process in place to take cases to Superior Court to have them enforce the subpoena. We have not had to do that yet. We've had a lot more positive response on being able to get responses and records from doctors, but we do have a plan in place to be able to go to Superior Court to obtain those records. So I think you'll see a lot fewer of those older cases in the very, very near future.
You know, like I said, if I had a case, I mean, I'd drive it down to you. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And that's what we recommend. We're here.
Yeah, I mean, I just can't understand why they're not responding. Okay, thank you.
No, that's really important, and that does give me great pain when we're looking at cases from 2023. And if you could take a look at whatever percentage on the bell curve for whatever time frame, the top 5% that are not done or whatever the number or percentage that seems appropriate would be. And we can look at advancing those to Superior Court and getting these subpoenas done, because I would like to make sure that we don't have too many cold cases.
I like that. Cold cases. I like that.
Thank you. I don't watch the TV shows. I think there's one called that. Came to mind. All right. Please feel free to reach out to me with that, Mr. Bohol. I'd love to see what we could do to make sure we're holding people responsible for their actions and getting this done.
Absolutely.
Perfect. Anything else that would be requested, Mr. Bohol? All right, I appreciate it. I think we need a motion for item number 11. Is that to adjournment?
That's correct.
Okay.
I make a motion for adjournment.
We have a motion on the floor. Is there a second?
Second.
I will second. Okay, we'll give it to you.
Have a good weekend. Great job, everybody. Yeah.